A deep love and respect for the Kimberley's land and its people is at the heart of Susan Bradley's long connection to the area. The pastoralist and former Shire of Windham East Kimberley president has been awarded an Order of Australia Medal in the Australia Day Honours List. Ms Bradley's been recognised for her service to the community, including being the first chair of the Kimberley Development Commission, heading the ore development study and Kimberley beef strategy, as a manager or owner of a number of stations, a justice of the peace and a celebrant. During her 50 years in the region, she's seen plenty of changes in the cattle industry and along the way became friends with Mary and Elizabeth Durack. But as she explains, it all began with a chance meeting with another Kimberley identity at Perth's New Year's Race Day in 1969.
I first arrived in 1969 as secretary to Maxine McDonald at Fossil Downs, and I spent my first 2 years at Fossil Downs just outside Fitzroy Crossing, and that was in, I arrived in February of 69, and I've never felt so hot in my life. I'd met Mrs. Mack, as we called her. I met her at the Perth race meeting on the 1st of January after I'd come back from overseas. And she was looking for a companion and a secretary at Fossil. And I was at a bit of a loose end and I thought, why not? I'd spent some time over at Brunette Downs in the Northern Territory in the heyday of King Ranch. And I thought, oh, this would be wonderful to go to the Kimberley. And so I did.
What were your impressions of Fossil Downs?
Well, Mrs. McDonald was one of the most amazing women. She had lived through the war years at Fossil. It was a wonderful experience, and it was she was like a mentor, really, very involved in the community, and I just loved every moment of it. And it was whilst I was at Fossil that I flew back to Brunette Downs with Peter. It was heyday, really, of the Kimberley. Peter Murray was on Mount Hart, and Ken Warriner was on Mount House, and they were, King Ranch and Tease Brothers were moving large mobs of cattle out to the meatworks in Broome and in Derby and in Windham, and they were flying over to Brunette and had a spare seat on the charter plane, and Martin Pearson Jones was the pilot. So I flew over with them, and it was there that I met David, who was the King Ranch vet and who I ended up marrying.
So you end up running your own stations. What was the challenge early on for you on places like Carlton and Ivanhoe stations?
They were great years. I mean, we worked unbelievably hard. We played pretty hard too. It was, David had always had his eye on Carlton Hill because of the water. They're an amazing cattle station, Carlton. And it had great groundwater supply, and also that 60 kilometres frontage onto the Ord River, as did Ivanhoe. Every time I wanted to do something, you know, to the house or the any spare pennies we had went into bores or fencing or yards. And, you know, they were tough years, but they were very, very happy years. I mean, I was very involved with the station and station life. It was also then that I got involved with the community. I, you know, became president of the Shire of Windham East Kimberley. I was passionate about the East Kimberley and the ore development. We introduced Lakina and farms onto the Ord. I was the chair of the Ord Development Council and on the co-op. And David always used to say his contribution to the community was me.
Well, what a contribution it has been, because you have got the Order of Australia Medal for such a contribution to the community of the Kimberley. And I know that you're deeply involved in in people's lives. You're also a celebrant. You've represented so many different organisations because you care about the Kimberley. What gives you this drive and determination then?
It's amazing. I think once the Kimberley is in your heart, it becomes part of you, and it's very hard to take it out. I always remember Elizabeth Durack, as we were not long before she died, we were driving out to a stock camp out on Mantini, and she hadn't been on that particular road, or track it was really, since 1950, 51. And she, as she got out, she knew every creek and every gate and fence line. And as she got into the car, we had the swags in the back because we were going to stay with the stock camp. And as she got into the car, she said, "Susan, I just wish I could wrench the Kimberley out of my heart and throw it away, as it would make my life so much simpler." Because she said, every time she thinks of anything or does with her painting or her family or anything, her thoughts and her love used to return to the Kimberley. And looking back on that, that's how I feel, I think. Mary Durack used to come up to the Kimberley every year and stay with me. And her stories of the old times and her love. And she had these wonderful four old, what she called, they called her their chisters. Before she came up, I always used to go in and say to them, "Look, Mary's coming." And Mary also had a son who she grew up, old Geoffrey Chunema. And I'd get them all organised. And when Mary arrived, we'd take the swags out and we'd all go out and camp on Ivanhoe. And the stories of these old Aboriginal women and Mary sitting around a campfire at night, I just learnt so much from them. I often feel, both with not only those old friends of and who ran Ivanhoe during the war years with Mary and Elizabeth, and when the men were away at war, but I often feel that the old people, the Mirrawong, Gadgerong people, like old Daisy Carlton and Ruby Dubalong, and Doris Bilminga, they were. I always felt that I learnt so much more from them than I was ever able to teach them. They had a very big impact on my life and a huge responsibility to look after the country and to care for the country. And that's what I think inspires me. I think also you have to be open to listening and participating and be, as a white woman living in this country, in the early days, you had to be non-judgmental, I think. And I tried very much to be. And as soon as I got involved with these, and I thought of them as family. I still do. I still go. I don't go into Kununurra as often as I used to. And sadly, very sadly, most of the times I drive into Kununurra, which is over 400 kilometres, is for funerals. And that, to me, is really heartbreaking, particularly seeing the number of young people dying.
I understand you were part of a group that helped pioneer the live cattle trade with Indonesia. Tell me more about that era.
We did. What we realised, it was during the years that both Wyndham and Broome Derby meatworks were closing down, and there was a whole new, instead of keeping your bullocks till they were 6 or 7 years old, that the time was rife for more vertical integration, and we sent off feeder steers from our Lakina farms on the Ord. And it was, we also, David went up to Indonesia and we went into a joint venture with one of the large Indonesian cooperatives in East Java, and we built or we renovated an old abattoir and started a little meatworks up there. And we were the first pastoralists to actually get our own export license. And we leased a very small ship that went out of Wyndham and then into a little place in East Java called Banyuwangi. And so we'd muster the cattle, David in a helicopter and our jackaroos on horseback, would get them all onto the trucks and into Wyndham and onto the ships that afternoon. And off they'd go to Banyuwangi and we'd fly up to unload them. And there were the young agrarian farmers in Indonesia, and they'd take a feeder steer, one steer per family, and they'd put a nose ring through the ring through their noses, and off they'd go. And they were paid by this cooperative on the weight gain. So you'd see the husband leading the steer off, and the wife. And the children, and they'd cut and carry the grass before they were killed at this meatworks. And we'd only kill 15, 20 a day, and we sold the beef into the supermarkets in Surabaya. And Ernie Bridge, who was in those days Minister for Agriculture, he and his team got behind us and came up and we did it was quite a grand occasion up there. And Ernie got out his guitar at the governor's residence and sang all these, you know, all his helicopter cowboy and top end ringer. And the Indonesians just thought it was fantastic. And we had a barbecue of all the Carlton Hill beef. Big banners of Carlton Hill beef in the supermarkets. But those were pretty heady days.
Did you know it was going to be such a game changer, that trade and that export?
We didn't, and it sort of was disappointing that we weren't in it when the big boys came along. But the rural recession of 92-93 really hit us. The banks just did not understand that Indonesian market and weren't prepared to lend us any more money. And we knew that to make it really work, we had to get a lot bigger. And we were unable to. And that's when, you know, in 95, we ended up selling to Consolidated Pastoral, which was very sad and for us. It was not a... it was probably the most unhappy time in our lives.
The end of an era. How do you rebuild from moments like that? What are the qualities that got you through?
I don't know. And I think it's very different for men and for women. I mean, I suppose David and I went off and we lived... he sailed around the world. He was pretty devastated by it all. And we lived on a Greek island for 6 months trying to work out what we were going to do. But the pull of the Kimberley was so strong for me. I just knew I had to come back. And unfortunately, it was the end of our marriage. David went to England and set up a veterinary practice over there. And I returned, and at an exciting time, really, because it was the time that the Myers family were looking at, they had shared many times, Maria Myers in particular, had absolutely become passionate and infatuated by the history and the culture of rock art in the Kimberley and its connection to Australia's early and prehistory. And I had that same feeling about it. And in the early 80s, David Muljali and Paddy Niawarra and Laurie Gunnanulli and Paddy Warmer had taken me out to show me some of their significant traditional sites in these rock art galleries and shared the history with me, which I just felt so privileged to have been there and experienced that. So when the Myers were looking, they were going to buy a couple of stations in the North Kimberley, and they asked me. I met Maria at a Graham Walsh lecture in Perth, and they had been supporting Graham and his research for a long time, and they approached me to go out and take possession of the properties and manage them for them as cattle stations, but with a very strong focus on research. And they are exceptional philanthropists as far as Australian history and prehistory. And so my Kimberley presence has taken a very different direction to what it was on Carlton Hill and Ivanhoe, and even richer than it was there.
And it brings together elements that I think many farmers and pastoralists probably already have when they're running their properties. There's the business, but there's the animal husbandry and the conservation and environment. And in this case too, you've got the deep historical elements on the property as well. It really weaves it all together. Do you think they work well together?
Absolutely. I'm absolutely certain that by far the majority of pastoralists are conservationists and environmentalists. We are giving much more focus to it than the majority who are having to rely on cattle sales to run their properties. We are supporting like flora and fauna research, for example. We're now into our 12th year of a team of flora and fauna scientists and academics and PhD students who we are supporting to come out and look at the wildlife in the North Kimberley. Finding all sorts of things, how that relates to fire and climate change, and are the stock doing damage to the country. Cecilia Myers, who's really driving it all now, the next generation, she's quite exceptional as far as her passion and her feeling of responsibility. We're fighting the cane toads. We're making cane toad sausages to drop out to feed the quolls, to try and save the quolls. We've got goldenback tree rat programs going. We're doing fire mitigation. We've got very strong weed control programs going. So all this is something that I'm on the ground as part of the team, if you like, and a bit of doing the organisation. And the most fascinating and the most wonderful thing for me is doing the research into the rock art. And the Kimberley Foundation, which I founded another friend in the early 90s or mid 90s, we now have a chair of Kimberley Rock Art, and we've raised the money to a chair of Kimberley Rock Art at UWA, and just recently we've got one at Melbourne universities, and scientists now from all over the world are coming to study the rock art. And none of this would happen unless the traditional owners They've come to us and said, look, we want to know. We know the mythology is, we know the mythology, but we want to see how that ties in with the science, so it's in parallel. And all these scientists who come, we try, and the young Aboriginals who have ties to that particular area, that part of country, they join in, and they're really motivated and excited by it. And we've got to find out the mysteries. How old are these paintings?